Thinking a little bit more of how to, you know, don't short develop, be sure your temperatures are right, you know, basic, elementary, because I guess that's what he had to work with. He was students that were totally inexperienced at what has to go on in a dark room, and what the developer does, and what
so did you say he stuck with this only until about the end of that year?
I don't know.
That was because you left, or
I left.
Did he stay on then for?
Yeah, he did. After that? He did. I've got some letters in which he says that he's getting terribly depressed
with LeGrand.
With well, with the activities of the art center, but it's just not enough. When you mentioned that Morris might make a helper for him, but he talks so low that you can't hear him. Whatever. He was just kind of depressed, and then when he got drafted into the army, he was really annoyed.
So that's what got him out of LeGrand.
That's right.
Yeah, that was 42.
Right, yeah. Right. So he stayed on through 41 then.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there are any other people still living who might have been in some of those classes with him?
Well,
around LeGrand?
John Turner.
John was?
Oh, yes.
He didn't tell me that.
Well, nail him.
I will.
Do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I had forgotten where the dark room was. I knew it was in the back of the building and off to the left behind the bar area. But John says, oh no, it was downstairs in the basement.
Hmm.
In that relationship to the building, but one floor further down.
Mm-hmm.
And so forth. And then he had a studio down there. He took he took this picture of me and signed it. And I'm sure it's of great value.
Well, turning it to you.
I don't know. My wife hated it. She says, what in the world is he trying to do, you know, get me all smoothed up. I have had a little liver spot on the side of my face,
mm-hmm.
and he was very concerned that he takes some of this panchromatic makeup and get that covered up so that I had a smooth face, and then put the flour in here. And here's,
that probably expresses his emotion.
I'm sure it did. I'm sure it did.
This is a better one.
One, yeah.
Yeah. You said you were a student at Eastern Oregon Normal School at that time?
When it was a normal school, and then the next year it was Eastern Oregon College of Education.
Yeah.
And then it went to Eastern Oregon State College or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Did you have the idea at that point of being a teacher?
No. I went to it because it was a junior college, and I had the idea at that time of working for DuPont, E.I. DuPont de Nemours or something like that, doing research chemistry.
Mm.
And then the chemistry teacher, Dr. Albert Logan, had come to us from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology prep school. And he did not go back far enough to pick us up. I had come out of Elgin, class of 17.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a chemistry lab. You know, whatever. I had no chemistry background, whatever. Get in there and they don't have any advisors. So I signed up for chemistry, physics, math, and English. No way in the world that you could carry all those. So I finally dropped the math and stayed with chemistry and physics, and then I took the second year of chemistry. And it was in that year that I got a job in the chem lab under the NYA, National Youth Administration. And at that same interval of time, I had joined the National Guard. So between the National Guard and the NYA, and being a representative for the Chemical Rubber Company, which sold on consignment rubber aprons, rubber gloves, handbook of chemistry, which is a book about that thing you've seen maybe, perhaps, the commission that you would make off of those, I had enough money to pay the tuition. Now, when I first went there, the initial tuition was $27.50. or $2.50 for your initial paperwork. After that, it was $25 a quarter or a semester, whatever they were like that. Mm-hmm. And so to acquire $25 from these three sources, it was possible. So,
and you were squeezing in the night classes with Minor White along with your chemistry and physics.
Well, yes and no. If he didn't come here until June.
Oh, that's right. So it was mainly the summer then.
It was mainly the summer with him, but I still went from college during the week to being free on the weekend where we could go off on some exploratory trip for photographs. So that couldn't have happened very many times because school probably ran until 20th of June.
But then the early fall, you could have done it.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in September we were going to do one. But we went up to Joseph, spent the night in a hotel in Joseph, a two-story wooden frame building. And the next morning we drove up to the trailhead and hiked up to Ice Lake and then back. And this picture of him with his feet in the water. It's the one at Ice Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at that time that he took this picture of the little rock holding up the big one. But then after he got out of California School of Fine Arts, I think he went back to Rochester to be with an assistant director of George Eastman House, something back there, and lost track of him. And then finally, oh, I don't know, 20 years later, I guess, I found an address in a photo magazine, and I wrote him a long letter bringing him up to date, but I never got an answer to it.
This Gerald Robinson article refers to workshops that he gave in Portland, and I guess in the 1960s, after he had become fairly well established in other parts of the country. And he said, over the years, the workshop members in Minor White held dialogues about his photographic theories in letters, taped discussions, personal visits, and subsequent workshops. One issue was the extent to which an expressive photograph actually contains spirit, as opposed to what a viewer brings to it and infuses it into his or her mind. So, in view of what you remember about Minor White, what do you think a little later in his career he could have meant by spirit in a photograph?
Just the spirit of the photographer himself coming through the picture to say something about what he was thinking to whatever the viewer might have been.
Not possible to define in any other way?
I don't think so.
You either had it or saw it or...
That's right. Either you've got it or you don't have it. I don't think... Well, he was trying to get us to read some of these books. The Story of a Face. Whatever. You want to shut that off? I'll go get up. Other than photography at the California School of Fine Arts. And so we had to do some research for other artists. Picasso, Matisse, Derain, Rouault, Georges Rouault, and so forth. And Nolde, and a whole bunch of stuff like that. And whatever.
These are your notes from that.
This is my school notebook. Photography, Ansel Adams. An enlargement is another expression of photography, and so forth. Here is an example of that. So here you've got zone 0 to 9, mm-hmm. 9 mm-hmm. which is the expanse of it. And so if you have something here, and this is what it reads, but you wish it read there, then it would tell you how much development, 3/4 normal, what's that?
Pyrocat.
Oh, pyrocatogen. That is one where you can take a picture and have a light bulb on in the room and yet see the filament in the light bulb and also see all the detail in the room. Pyrocatogen is done with sodium hydroxide. You wear rubber gloves and all that other stuff.
Now, this exposure record and all of the numbers and abbreviations and other symbols on it makes photography look like a highly technical operation. Is it possible that Ansel Adams, by these kinds of calculations, was somehow carrying out Minor White's idea of how you get spirit into a photograph?
No, I wouldn't say.
Well, otherwise, you have some kind of psychic control over the camera, it seems, to infuse spirit.
I don't know.
This looks to me
it
how you
be.
Control the camera.
Yeah. All right, here, January 6th, Minor White. Assignment B1, description, a written outline of your mental approach while photographing creatively. An outline of the essence of chapters 1, 2, and 10 of The Story of a Face by Bailey. And then here, the student's critique of his work. I think I have very briefly selected the essence of each chapter in the book. I have stated the manner in which I make a photograph. It will possibly change in time, but at present, this is it.
If you're told to figure out what your mental attitude is when you take a picture, what do you do?
Yeah.
You just say something like, I hope to hell this turns out right?
Yes, exactly. Now here is a night class that Minor taught, which was different than the stuff to the regular students. And these were some guys that were working that would come in. And this is on developing agents. The preservative, the accelerator, the restrainer, what all of those do in the process of developing.
So he would get pretty technical about that?
Yeah, because he's talking to probably photographers that are out working it. Mm-hmm. White, special 1 and 2, description. Two prints requiring flash fill. Two prints of contrasting subjects requiring pyrocatogen development. A technical problem to be done without losing sight of the aesthetic requirements of the picture. A picture of a person in a location where sunlight only on one side with flash to fill in the shadow side. And then here are blank pages. Ansel Adams, to increase exposure by 50% of solution, developing agents B and A, water at 125, damn, whatever. Overexposure of a negative will flatten the highlights. Density below zone 3 has no detail. Normal exposure, including reciprocity failure, are acceptable. Very easy to get too much exposure for detail in the shadows. And so on and so on and so forth. And just notes and notes.
Well, that sounds like a lot of explanation of technique that would be completely comprehensible intellectually. It wasn't kind of some kind of magic that White otherwise seemed to talk about.
That's right. That's right. Ansel would teach you to be able to measure the light on a subject and record it, because the client wants detail in the shadows and he doesn't want overexposure in the highlights, and yet you need a good, what we choose to call print quality.
Mm-hmm. You referred earlier to Ms. Prudhomme, I think it was, who was teaching at the Art Center, on Depot Street, and you thought that she was the one who influenced White to get into the Catholic Church?
Isabel Kane.
Kane?
Isabel Kane.
Okay.
And Isabel Kane married a guy named Bailey, and in New York City she was killed in an automobile accident.
But I'm wanting to focus on White and the Catholic Church. Did he ever talk to you about
why he didn't? What did you suspect
was the reason that he wanted, was interested in that religion?
Only that Isabel Kane was. Because from there he went to Zen, and he went to Eastern religions, and basically nothing. You know.
Was he interested in her romantically, or just...
I don't think so. I think he was totally homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
And...
what was her attraction for him?
Not being a woman, I don't know.
Well,
but I mean, I don't.
The Catholic Church connection. You said he thought he was interested in the church because she was there. What might he have been?
He was interested in the church because she was influential in saying, "Why don't you join this? You will get the satisfaction that you need." It wasn't something that he did to appease her. I think she was just seeing that he was kind of floundering, and she said, "There's some stability in the Catholic Church," and that was her church, and he may have been looking for that stability. He may have been looking for that stability, mm-hmm. and yet, perhaps, not finding it as quickly or as thoroughly as he thought he would. Then he experimented with the Eastern mm-hmm. religions and got into them. I don't know. I saw a picture in a magazine. Much, much later, in the late 70s, I guess, shortly, probably only a few years before he died, where he has two or three students on each side, and they're walking away from him, and his head is about this big. It looks like he's got his hair totally white in an afro. It looks just like that. And he was one that would get these guys up, and they would go through calisthenics or something first thing in the morning to get themselves loosened up and to get the mind flowing so that they could get spirit into their picture. I don't know. It's just something that I'm glad, really, that I've had the experience of knowing him, of working with him, of having the friendship, but also being able to get away from it to the point where I was able to do the photography that I've done, which is much more closely related to Ansel's work. I used a lot of the techniques that I learned from Ansel because I was working for Lucky Stores, and once in a while I would get something besides printing to do, and they brought in a display rack for Lifesavers, gums, things like that. A rack maybe 30 inches wide, and it was floor mounted on legs, but it started at about maybe 18 inches off the ground and went up, and all these things. And so I took it into the darkroom area where we made the photographic plates, which is possible to darken, and set up my camera, got it focused, turned off the lights, opened the shutter, there was total darkness, and so then I'm taking a photo light in my hand and just painting that thing with light all the way around like this, and then go around behind it, light off, around behind it, and do this so that you fill in all the openings. Now that's a trick that I did not learn in Minor White, but we learned that from Adams, and it has worked. You know,
what would be the total exposure time with something like that?
Oh man, you stop it way down, and you might have you've got somebody that's keeping time. You may calibrate that it's going to take you 20 seconds. You're going to have 20 seconds to do this painting business, and then you shut that off. So that doesn't count against your 20 seconds, and then you go around behind it. And that doesn't count any of it, because that's just filling in the gaps. But you'd establish an exposure going by the intensity of that one particular light held at one spot, and calculate that that's going to give you, you're going to drop it down to where it'll take 20 seconds for that. And then you figure that, you figure about 5 seconds, because in 20 seconds you're going to be off of that two-thirds of the time, you know. And we use Polaroid film, so you can see immediately where you're at. And while you're still all set up, then you can modify it. Polaroid film is wonderful for that kind of stuff.
Do you hope with that technique to come out with a photograph that looks like art?
No, you are after a photograph that will come out that will satisfy the client.
But
yeah,
it doesn't look entirely realistic, does it?
Yeah, it does. It does. You can see the label. There's no highlights that block out. You can read the labels on each of those packages of gum and whatever, and that's exactly what they want. And then they send that out to all the stores. Mm-hmm. This is how we want you to fill this rack when they send it to you.
As you describe it, though, it sounds to me as though the photograph would be unusual, eye-catching, in the way advertising needs to be.
Could be. Could be. One of the big assignments, it took the entire spring. Ansel was on the board of directors for the Pacific Gas and Electric Company. And he got approval to take his classes through many phases of the utility. Not the gas, just the electric part of it. And so some of us opted to go up into the mountains and do the hydraulic turbine things. Others went to a gas-fired place. Another one went to, there was an oil-fired generator in San Francisco. And then there was distribution, and there was maintenance. And I got into a place where they were overhauling, repairing the electric meters. And they'd have this master meter, and they've got these others here, and they're getting them calibrated to where they the same way, and they're getting those out. And that there was one in which I used 7 different flash bulbs. And there weren't too many of us that were too experienced with flash, but I had a battery, flashlight batteries, you know. I had about able to screw on and get about 7 flashlight batteries, which could run you through a whole lot of cords, because we didn't have the little electric eyes that would trigger and fire a flash. You had to power each one. Mm-hmm. And so you'd have to have enough power to set them all off, whatever. So on and so, that type of thing is the kind of stuff that Ansel was getting us able to comprehend and able to come through and produce prints from being assigned to staff. And so that was one of the great opportunities.
Now, I don't want to take a couple minutes more, but I want to ask you whether you encountered in all your photographic activities another well-known photographer of the 20th century, W. Eugene Smith.
Leaving out the W, I've met you.
Yeah. But not him?
No, I haven't met him.
He was a very different sort from me, I know.
Yes, and he was different from... He was a journalist type.
Yes.
And so forth. No, I've met Weston. I've met Imogen Cunningham. And... one of Weston's boys, Brett, and so on. But Eugene Smith had a journalistic approach. He with a Leica, you know, you don't have to get under the black cloth. And you could get things done quickly.
He came to University of Oregon in 1967, according to Robinson, in Eugene, to teach a workshop along with Ansel Adams and Brett Weston.
Well, for goodness sakes. Huh, I didn't know
I guess
that.
You weren't there.
No, I was among those who wasn't there.
Yeah. And Brett Weston was Ansel's, or Edward's son?
Edward's oldest.
Uh-huh.
Now there's an ad in the newspaper, in the photo magazines, of Cole Weston, which was his third boy.
Huh.
And it's advertising Reese tripods. And it says, why do I use Reese? Because it's the best there is. And it shows a picture of him with an 11x14 view camera that's way up here, and he's got his hat on, and he's really making an adjustment in it. I don't know. But I didn't meet him. But Imogen Cunningham lived on Green Street, which was not too far from the school. And once in a while, she would come down and sit in on one of Ansel's lectures. And they just delighted in annoying each other. And it was much to the enjoyment of the students, because they would hassle each other and so on. I wish I could have met Dorothea Lange. She lived in Richmond, and I lived in San Lorenzo, which was 40 miles or so, but I never got up there to meet him. How do you meet a celebrity? You're going, I'd like to meet you.
Yeah, right.
That's hardly...
The opening line's hard to find.
Yes, it sure is.
So, I'm not at the point yet where I know which of these things might be most appropriate, but at the appropriate time, I'd like to seek your permission to use some of these things.
Whatever.
The other part of this project is to produce an encyclopedia of Union County history, and one of the articles will certainly have to do with photography, and you and Minor White, and maybe John Turner.
John Turner, sure.
Prominently mentioned. And some of the details here about, like, this letter announcing a lecture, two lectures on photography
he's
going to give, and the schedule here, and maybe the picture of him with his feet in Ice Lake, a few things like that might be of interest.
You're certainly welcome.
Good.